stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.
What do you get when you feed a baby Skittles?
A piñata!
Why is a wooden block better than a baby? When you put knives in the block, they stay clean. Why are babies better than wooden blocks? Just easier to burn.
Alright, dude, that guy got 10,000 views for that video.
Okay, well, I think we can carry on. We don't need it.
So, what you just heard there is a genre of jokes called dead baby jokes. I know, even that just kind of sucks the energy out of the room. So dead baby jokes are jokes sort of in riddle form, beginning with what a question, concluding with a grotesque answer, such as how many babies...
Wait, I was going to say that. Why don't we do some examples of dead baby jokes?
Yeah, but first, you are at... welcome to
Comedy History 101.
Where we talk about the history of comedy. I'm Harmon Leon, and with me, as always, is Scott Colonico. How are you, Scott?
I'm fine, Harmon. I'm just taking care of my newborn baby over here. Hello, baby.
Oh, that gets a little bit dark, because that's the topic of today's podcast on Comedy History 101, is the history of dead baby jokes. Now, before turn off this podcast, thank you for supporting us. Thank you for all the people that have subscribed on iTunes and left all those amazing comments on iTunes, and also those people that have kicked in a few dollars on our Patreon page, which you can find at our website, wordsoverchair.com. So we just want to thank our loyal listeners. And with that, we want to treat our loyal listeners to the history of dead baby jokes. Now, Scott, as you're mentioning, could you give us a few examples of some dead baby jokes?
Okay, are you ready, Harmon?
Yes, I am.
Okay, let me quiet my newborn baby that's staying here with me. Hold on. Okay, you ready?
Yes.
How many babies does it take to paint a house?
Just none, because like babies really don't have the capacity to paint a house?
No, it depends on how hard you throw them.
Oh.
Yeah.
What else?
Hold on, I'm not done. What's more fun than nailing a baby to a post?
Everything else in life?
Ripping it off again.
Ooh.
That's horrible. That's awful. Yeah. I got one more for you. All right, you ready?
Okay, yeah.
Okay. How do you get 100 dead babies into a box?
Ooh, I don't know. Must you?
God damn. All right. I didn't read this one all the way through. Okay, let's start over. How do you get... Oh, God.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, you ready? Yes. How do you get 100 dead babies into a box?
I do not know.
With a blender.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's bad. But then here's the thing. How do you get them out again?
Bag of chips?
Yeah, with a bag of tortilla chips. I'm going to put tortilla chips in there because that would be better.
A little more descriptive. So, as y'all know, dead baby jokes are a genre of humor which is called black comedy. Dead baby jokes, just a little historic sort of background, began around the 1960s and ran through the 80s in like gallows humor, trying to make light of the worst of human atrocities. Dead baby jokes were often used in a gross out manner. I'm reading this and gross out is in parentheses, at which time a participant would try to outdo the previous storyteller in recounting yet another unsavory and crude sort of example of a dead baby scenario.
It's interesting because these were first kind of noted or studied by the American folklore scholar Alan Dundas, who is a professor of anthropology at the University of California, in his book Cracking Jokes, Studies of Sick Humor, Cycles, and Stereotypes. That's interesting because I actually took a few film study classes in college myself.
Oh, yeah. Did you study the works of Alan Dundas?
No, I studied the Mummers play in medieval England.
Oh, was that gallows-type humor?
It's more different. It's kind of like the pantomimes that they do over here in the UK. And they actually kind of still do, apparently they still do some kind of Mummers play in Philly. It's like a big thing there, Mummers Parade.
Yeah, it's interesting. But then again, like what we're saying is like you're trying to find, it's dark humor, trying to find the worst of human atrocity as sort of like a coping mechanism. It goes back to, I don't know, like I think more recent examples are jokes like, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you like the theater? You know, there you go, time and distance. The humor there, her husband, Abraham, shot in a theater.
Yeah, well, that was like, I was going to make a note of this because this is actually the last thing, the last thing they said to JFK was Nellie Connolly, the wife of the governor of Texas, when they were in Dallas in the motorcade, she turned to the president and she said, "Mr. President, you can't say that Dallas doesn't love you."
that was a true thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a true thing. But
she wasn't being ironic. My statement will soon be riddled with irony, much like your head will be riddled with bullets. Too soon, dude. But you know, I see what our man Alan Dundas is saying here is like it's black humor, comedy as a coping mechanism of thinking of the worst case scenario and making light of it because it makes light of it, it diffuses it, but then also it's so dark and horrific that it releases a cathartic reaction in the joke recipients.
Yeah, I mean to go back to our friend Dundas, he was theorizing the dead baby joke cycle began in early 60s at the same time when the second wave of feminism in the US started to rise. Also, this is a time when legalized abortions and contraceptives were making their way across the country, the rise of sex education in schools, women's lib, women going to the workplace. I mean, originally babies were kind of seen as a way for men to keep women subjugated, you know, keep them barefoot and in the kitchen is what they would say in the olden days.
Barefoot and pregnant with a baby in the kitchen.
Oh, that's right. So not just barefoot in the kitchen.
Yeah, so that's kind of an interesting phenomenon of how the jokes popped up because then once again, women had the freedom to do like contraceptives or birth control where they weren't, you know, tied down to being, as you just said, barefoot and pregnant. And according to Dundas in this essay, well, it's actually part of the book he wrote, an essay in the book, is the price to pay is guilt and fighting fear. And dead baby jokes were used as a means to sort of dehumanize babies where it's not like a specific baby. It would be like the joke would be, as you mentioned, like how did 100 dead babies get in a box? So they almost stopped being human in a way. A blender and tortilla chips.
Tortilla chips. That's mine. I've added that. So in folklorists, they would categorize things because like each dead baby joke would be like series A and then be series B. So I just kind of invented my own, you know, the standard response instead of saying chips. I just said tortilla chips. So I would be the series variant C.
Oh, you brought something that was a joke phenomenon of the 60s through the 80s up until the 2018s.
Right.
You could even like say it's a type of chip is, you know, wasn't available back then. And then you sort of modernized the whole joke.
Right. Oh, they had them back then. I guess they weren't. Yeah. I kind of like, as a kid say, I rebooted it.
You rebooted it. Yeah. So another example of like how that type of humor comes into play. I the joke that comes to mind is a guy walks into a doctor's office. And the doctor says, "I have good news and bad news." And the guy goes, why don't you tell me the bad news first?" And the doctor goes, "Sorry to say, you have cancer." And the guy goes, "Well, tell me the good news." And the doctor goes, "I have a date tonight with my receptionist." So again, you're playing on the worst case scenario, fear of going in and being diagnosed with a deadly, horrific, you know, condition, and then you're downplaying it on the self-centeredness of the doctor. So in a way, you're kind of dehumanizing what would be your worst case scenario if you did go into a doctor's office.
Right, but so the doctor was dating his receptionist?
That was the good news.
Highly frowned upon.
Yeah, but that would be again, it's a dated joke. Now. The that doctor would, jokes are, okay, are right. dated because you shouldn't date in the workplace because it's not reciprocated, it's seen as sexual harassment. Subject to being sued.
Right, exactly.
So in another rise of the dead baby joke, and we're talking about it came about with the rise of contraceptives and women's lib. Also, a lot of it has to do with fear of technology, because a lot of these jokes involve what if the machines that we have that we've created suddenly turned against us? So like you were saying, there's a lot of jokes like dead baby lawnmower type jokes or like you say the blender kind of scenario, and it's like suddenly there was like a rise of technology, and then what if this technology that we've created, you know, sort of turns against us.
Yeah, and then Dundas was also speculating, you know, because the rise of these was during the 60s, and he was suggesting that the response to the images of the graphic images of war that people were seeing in Vietnam, that they were seeing on their TV screens every night now, you know, it was something to, it's kind of a coping mechanism.
Yeah, exactly. So you would see these scenes of just, you know, dead bodies from war. And again, it's like, in a way, you're sort of, you become desensitized by the graphic violence. And often, you know, these horrific scenes from the Vietnam War involved, like, infants. So again, it's like, this is sort of the catalyst or sort of the climate of which this joke genre arose from. This type of humor, you know, it dates all the way back to, say, 1729, when Jonathan Swift wrote A Modest Proposal, which I read in a college satire class, which I think is like one of the pinnacle works of satire. Have you ever read A Modest Proposal?
Yes, I did. I believe I had to read it for a class as well.
It's great, and it's like the darkest of dark humor. That's like, and again, I read this book on the history of Saturday Night Live, and they actually quote like Jonathan Swift as this like turning point of satire of humor, and what Saturday Night Live originally was intending to do was, you know, like Jonathan Swiftian humor, which the essay's all about. It's during like Is it the potato famine? Because that wouldn't be 1729. That was like the 1800s. But it was like, you know, people living in poverty with no food. So the essay suggests that that people should sell their children to the rich as a source of food for the rich. That was the modest proposal. Mm-hmm. Modest satire.
That wasn't real. You wouldn't really do that.
No. You're satirizing the conditions of the time. You're satirizing a class system. You're satirizing, you know, modern economics and whatnot. And anyways, it's just like, you know, just a pinnacle piece of great dark humor. So, and what Dundas actually said, like the whole trend of sick humor, you know, also comes back from like in England. And in 1869, an English poet named Harry Graham, he published a poem called Ruthless Rhymes for Heartless Homes. And in one rhyme of the volume, a verse goes, Billy in one of his nice new sashes fell into the fire and was burnt to ashes. Now, although the room grows chilly, I haven't the heart to poke poor Billy.
Aw.
That's kind of funny in a dark humor way, you know, probably stemming out of that was a time, you know, like Ring Around the Rosie, that children's nursery rhyme, that's about the plague.
The plague. Yeah.
So again, as a coping mechanism, kids made up rhymes of Ring Around the Rosie, Pocketfuls of Posy, Ashes, Ashes, We All Fall Down, that's basically all the symptoms of the plague right there. The Black Death, as they called it.
Yeah, I mean, I think people are just so now just kind of so accustomed to the internet where they can kind of fact check things and they forget how, you know, rumors and folklore was spread, you know, was word of mouth. You know, and mm-hmm. that was kind of the ties into the dead baby jokes where, you know, it was kind of a coping mechanism.
Yeah, and also the dead baby formula actually spawned out of earlier jokes, and it's always kind of interesting to see the evolution of jokes. Originally, what they did was they were taking, like, say, elephant jokes, which were another popular sort of joke format, and just converted them into dead babies. Like, for example, there was like an elephant joke of how do you make an elephant float? The answer would be two scoops of ice cream and an elephant. In pretty much a dead baby joke writing practitioner would change mm-hmm. that to how do you make a dead baby float? Two scoops of ice cream and a dead baby.
And then there was another one. This is a variant of that, was the frog joke, which yes. This is actually the first dead baby joke I think I remember hearing. But mm-hmm. this is the frog joke, was that is what's green and goes 250 miles an hour? Answer, a frog in a blender.
Yes, so all you do is you substitute the word frog for the word dead baby. Boom. So in a way, that's almost like these early practitioners of this genre were almost sort of hacks. Well, first of all, why don't you think we hear dead baby jokes so much anymore?
On the internet. Everything's on the internet, man, Harmon.
Yeah, but we tell jokes. We tell jokes to... Why do you think that genre sort of, so to speak, died out?
I don't know. I guess maybe because we have access to much more horrible things now. And so it just seems kind of quaint.
Like, you know? it's just kind of more of a... innocent time of sick humor?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Because then you get, you know, you kind of got, after Vietnam, and then nowadays, you know, you got...
Trump.
Yeah, 9/11, dude. It's all back to 9/11 and Trump.
Yeah, but this genre, you know, it flourished through the 80s and then sort of saw its peak. But I guess if you go back historically of what we're saying of, you know, the rise of women's lib and contraceptions and coming out of the horrors of the Vietnam War and kind of a fear of like technology of the machines that we've used as modern conveniences that somehow have turned against us within these jokes. You know, again, that was all of an era where, you know, like we said, yes, we have more horrible things, but they seem this joke genre seems more quaint, or, you know, it's basically, where else does it evolve to? We kind of heard it all. It kind of, you know, it's kind of like the Meatballs movie of the movie series Meatballs. Where else do you take mm-hmm. where else do you take the franchise?
Yeah, exactly. Where do you go?
What's the next chapter of it? You kind of like, yeah, there's exactly. No surprise. Meatballs. Yeah.
Meatballs 3 with Sally Kellerman.
Yeah, there's actually Meatballs 4 with Corey Feldman.
Well, I think that was, maybe that was the one. No, it wasn't. It was the one with Patrick Swayze, the guy from...
Patrick Dempsey.
Patrick Dempsey, yes.
Oh, he's in Meatballs 4? 3.
Yeah, it's a whole other plot. But you know what I was thinking, Harmon? You know, I think we should maybe... Why don't we try to end with we update a dead baby joke to 2018?
Okay, you go first.
Okay.
you're putting me on the spot. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to be. Yeah, no, that's the idea.
Be all cyber. Be all cyber.
Yeah. What's the best thing to have for breakfast?
I don't know what.
Mashed baby and avocado on toast. Oh, I should have said smashed avocado. That's what they say. Do they say that over there?
Yeah, what's the difference between a truck full of dead babies and a truck full of internet routers?
What?
with internet routers, you can't use a pitchfork to unload them.
Okay, yeah, that's good.
I was thinking about hardware.
You know what, Harmon? maybe one of our listeners out there has a good updated 2018 baby joke.
How many babies does it take to paint your new MacBook Pro laptop.
I don't know how many.
It depends on how hard do you throw them. See that again? Many, wait, oh, so you were about to pose a challenge to one of our listeners?
Yeah. Well, so I was going to say, I don't know if maybe if whoever our listeners out there, whoever comes up with the best 2018 version of the Dead Baby Joke could win some sort of prize, maybe a book that one of us might have published.
Oh, yeah. So I have a new book out called Meet the Deplorables, Infiltrating Trump America, available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. But if you leave a comment with a dead baby joke, the best one, we will give you for free, for winning, an ebook copy of the book.
There you go. That's it. Interactivity. I love it. Well, or could they tweet it out to us, at Words Over Chair?
At Words Over Chair, yes, on Twitter or, you know, via our website, wordsoverchair.com, where you can hear all the episodes of Comedy History 101. You can support us via our Patreon page, which will be linked to there, which we appreciate, you know, throw in a dollar or two. Help us, you know, spend more time digging into researching these topics because we love uncovering these nooks and crannies of comedy history for you. Scott, anything else you'd like to plug?
Just our usual. We've got our latest edition of This is the President is going to be up. It's going to be Harmon listening to LBJ's dog and making some comments about that. So that's This is the President, which you can find at the website, wordsoverchair.com. Also, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Last.fm, and everywhere else you find your wonderful podcasts.
Yes, so thank you. This has just been a short little mini episode of Comedy History 101. Thanks a lot for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.